WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. This is the story of a horror film which, like its main character, has come back from the dead. The low-budget Carnival of Souls went completely unnoticed when it was released in 1962. It played in so few theaters, hardly anyone got to see it. But now it's back in distribution, getting some very good reviews. Terrence Rafferty in The New Yorker called it bleak, unnerving. You're immersed in it, and when you come up, the world looks stranger. My guests are John Clifford, the writer, and Herc Harvey, the director of the film. They worked together for decades in an educational film company called Centron in Lawrence, Kansas. Carnival of Souls is their only feature film. It's the story of a church organist who's killed in a car that drives off a bridge into the river. Somehow she mysteriously walks out of the river and resumes her life. But she's trapped in a world between life and death. A phantom is following her to take her back to the world of the dead where she belongs. The phantom eventually possesses her and her music.
Profane, sacrilege, what are you playing in this church? Have you no respect? Do you feel no reverence? And I feel sorry for you and your lack of soul. This organ, the music of this church, these things have meaning and significance to us. I assume they did to you. But without this awareness, I'm afraid you cannot be our organist.
I spoke with Clifford and Harvey last summer when Carnival of Souls was first re-released to theaters. We've brought the interview back from the dead because Carnival of Souls has been given new life again. It's out on home video. It's also continuing to open in theaters around the country. The inspiration for Carnival of Souls was an abandoned amusement park on the outskirts of Salt Lake City that Herc Harvey found on a drive back from the West Coast.
It was one of the weirdest places I ever saw. And I stopped the car, looked at it for a minute, and thought, I got to get closer to this. So I walked down this long causeway out into the Salt area, and there was this old deserted amusement park. And I came back and told John, I said, you know, this is a terrific location. I think we can use some of the local locations and locations there and make a good feature film. John then fleshed out the ideas that we used.
This is a film that's really about complete alienation, about being incapable of making contact with other people, or as one character puts it, living in isolation from the human race. Were either of you experiencing that kind of alienation when you made this movie? Do I hear a laugh?
Yes, you do. No, I don't think so at all. No.
I don't believe so. No, it was... No, it wasn't.
But you sure did a compelling job, though, of expressing that kind of emotion. It must have come from somewhere.
Partly it was a creative decision to keep this woman away from all sympathy and help and to let... share the idea of being totally stranded and facing something that you can't explain.
I want to ask you about a couple of the images from the film that really stand out in my memory. One is, this is toward the end, in this abandoned dance pavilion, there's all of the lost souls, all of the ghoul-like people are dancing around, but there is no music. It's a very eerie, wonderful image. Herc Harvey, can you talk about creating the look of that?
Well, this was one of the reasons I think we decided to do the film in that location, because I had seen that location, and I think that's one of the weirdest locations. And actually, I think the idea of the dance and all was just fit to the location.
Another scene. The main character, the woman who's living in between life and death, she's in a dressing room trying on a dress in a department store, and she comes out and she realizes that for the moment she's become invisible. No one can either hear nor see her. It's a very, also a very eerie moment in which she's temporarily tuned out of life.
It was more than just not being able to hear anything or make contact with anyone. It was as though... as though for a time I didn't exist. as though I had no place in the world, no part of the life around me.
I remember in the first draft that scene wasn't in there. We were talking one day about in the middle of the film needed something, and I can't remember which one of us suggested it, but I remember in our conversation we came out with this idea of suspending her, of having her disappear for a while from life and then go back and forth in that way. I remember us sitting in the apartment thinking of that idea, but I can't remember exactly how it came up.
Herk Harvey, you cast yourself as the phantom who keeps following this woman who's living between life and death, following her to finally bring her back to the world of the dead where she belongs because she was actually killed in this car crash. Tell me why you cast yourself in that role.
That's my purpose in life. No, strictly economics.
Uh-huh. Well, you could have cast yourself in another role.
A little bit of ham.
Yeah. A little bit of ham, yes. Sure, you know, if you're going to do it, you might as well go all out and do it, right. No, part of it was the fact that I knew I was going to take three actors to Salt Lake, Mary Henry, the doctor, and the minister. And that was it budget-wise, and so, you know, it was just much easier on location rather than having somebody come in on the spur of the moment and do it, to go ahead and cast yourself and do it. Although, I always wanted to play a monster, really. I mean, that's, you know, acting. I majored in acting in college, and I enjoy it.
The main character in this movie is a church organist, and she plays some pretty bizarre music through the course of the movie. I think the organ is a really perfect touch, since organs have been used as a musical accompaniment for some horror films. And also playing church organ, I mean, after all, that is the place of the soul. You know, in a religious, in a house of religion. Tell me about making the organ such an important part of the film.
This may sound a little prosaic after what you just said, but there happens to be an organ factory in Lawrence, Kansas, and I knew they had this magnificent room where they test the organs. And I was thinking of ways that we could use whatever facilities we could find to put production values in the show. And I thought there ought to be some way I could use that organ factory. And then I thought, well, make the girl an organist. And everything else kind of fell in line from that idea.
Now, George Romero has said that Carnival of Souls was one of the inspirations behind his Night of the Living Dead. Who were some of the inspirations for you, Herk Harvey, in terms of making a cheap, independent horror film?
Well, at that time, there were a lot of people that were doing this, and probably Bob Altman over in Kansas City. I had just finished making about four films for Elmer Roden, who at that time owned Commonwealth Theaters in Kansas City, and they had gotten together and made Juvenile the Delinquents. They made about four films, and not the horror variety. Most of them were either cops and robbers or like the Delinquents at that time. This was the 60s, and that was a topic that was favorable. And we just saw them doing it and thought that the horror genre would be pretty good to get into as far as making enough money back to make another film,
Now, how did
was really the reason we made it.
Oh, so you used this as a movie to make another movie?
Sure.
Yeah, which you never did. That this is the great mystery. It's really, I think, such a wonderful and intriguing movie, and you never made another theatrical feature again.
That's true.
Well, you see, the best laid plans of mice and men all go to hell when a distributor steals all the money.
Is that what happened?
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what happened with this distributor.
Well, this was Hertz Lion Corporation in Los Angeles, and they were... Their names were given to us by General Labs at that time, and it was a very straightforward presentation because it was a stock-held company, and they said it had just been formed, and Mr. Ken Hertz at that time was the president. And basically, he took our film and six from Texas, then he bought several films from England and started a distribution company and was doing fine. We got early reports that it was doing all right. It only showed, basically, as a double feature in southeastern United States, mainly in drive-ins. And after a while, he owed us so much money, and I got back from a trip, well, just before I went on a trip to South America, he sent me a check, it bounced, and I knew we were in trouble. The next thing I know, he's out of the country, and I'm in South America, and it's hard to communicate as to what to do. We tried to trace him, and that was it. The money was gone.
I have to ask, you said earlier that the alienation that's expressed in this movie isn't something that you were both personally feeling. But I can't help but wonder if you maybe felt more alienated than you're letting on after this movie came out while you were working at the Educational Film Company, because it seems that you're both, I don't know, that you both have spirits that are a little bit odd, a little offbeat, and that you might have felt just a little too offbeat for where you were working.
Well, that's probably something to that. Maybe we leave it buried. We have scripts today. We're ready to go on movies right now if anybody wants to come up with the money.
Well, are you hoping that that's going to be a result of the revival of Carnival of Souls?
My own feeling is that I can take it or leave it. Because one of the nice things that happens is this is all a bonus as far as I'm concerned, because I've had a very good career, proud of the films I've made, and some of them, that is. Basically, it was great. I got to travel all around the world and do things, meet a lot of interesting people, so I don't know what more I would want. Except, you know, you do think, well, okay, one feature film, that doesn't say much. Ought to do it some more.
Herc Harvey, John Clifford, thank you both very much.
Terry, well, the fact that you saw our film twice makes us love you dearly.
That's right.
And thank you for calling us.
Director Herc Harvey and writer John Clifford, their 1962 movie Carnival of Souls is now on home video. This is Fresh Air.